So no, I don't bang the drum for Toyota. When I go into any organization, the first thing that I'm mindful of doing is understanding who they are, where they've come from, where they're trying to get to, and how can I help them. And the last thing they want to hear is me just going on about Toyota does this, Toyota does that, Toyota does the other. They don't want to know that.
Welcome to A State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with business leaders to discuss what it takes for a company to be in a state of readiness and become a high performance organization, with your host, Joseph Paris.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat between me, your host, Joseph Paris, and a select industry leader. Today, that industry leader is Kevin Robinson. Kevin is recently retired after 30 years with Toyota in the United Kingdom. He started at Toyota as an engineer at the Deerfield engine plant and retired as a general manager of manufacturing operations there. In between, Kevin was the founding senior manager of the Toyota Lean Management Center, also known as TLMC. There he developed a program of educational materials and on-site coaching support for sharing Toyota best practices to external clients across a diverse range of sectors, including government economic development initiatives in Wales and in the Republic of Ireland. In retirement, he enjoys indulging in his two passions, rally cars, which he builds and likes the navigator position, and operational excellence, which he practices as managing director of OPEX Performance Solutions at Consultancy. Hey, welcome, Kevin. Great to have you on my podcast today.
And great to be here, JP. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, likewise. It has been a while. It was pre-COVID since we've last seen one another. I believe it was up in Belfast at a conference there.
That's right. Yes, it was. Yes, and that was a great day as well. So
yeah, it was. It really was. I enjoyed the deliberations a great deal. Great folks up there. Didn't know it was so big into the Titanic, and even what is it? Game of Thrones was right. The final scene was shot there, wasn't it?
It was. I do believe yes, in the studio just down the road. Yes, I have been back there once since. I went to a family wedding, and we stayed in the same area, but. That was during COVID. That was quite difficult, but not for business, for pleasure.
Yeah, indeed. So, well, thanks for taking the time to join today. You're a Toyota veteran, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think that's what my years of service with Toyota entitled me to call myself, yes. Just under 30 years with Toyota here in the UK.
30 years with Toyota in the UK. Yeah. And recently, well, as compared to 30 years, recently you've struck out on your own.
Yes, 2019 to be exact, Joseph. I took opportunity for an early retirement, so I'm sort of semi-retired, but still trying to provide what I can to help people, basically.
Yeah. So 30 years and then early retirement. 30 years and an early retirement. How long did they expected you to go?
I don't know. It's how long they expected me to go. It was how long I expected me to go is the real question. I think. I think it was great timing for me. I've got to be honest.
Yeah. But you know, when you retired or semi-retired, you decided not to do gardening. You decided to stay in the game.
I did. I still enjoy the interaction and helping people, and I'm watching people's light bulb moments when they break through something they've been struggling with. They're really rewarding. Mm-hmm. And then I just do the donkey work around the house, so the wife takes care of everything else.
So you talked about mentorship when we were last together, and it seems like that is what you're trying to do in part now in your semi-retirement.
It is, yes. I don't know whether I call myself a mentor or a coach or a sensei, but my view is I spent years to learn things that I know now, and every day is a school day, so I'm still learning. But a lot of people gave their time and their effort to educate me over the years, and I want to give some back in some way, shape or form. So I don't want to be, I'm not looking for full-time occupation. It is semi-retirement, so I need to get the balance right. But if I can help organizations to improve and be more successful in some way, shape or form, then that, for me, that's great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I had many mentors on my professional journey, as I'm sure you have also. And I think that the very best mentors are people that didn't know they were being mentors.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, they took you under their wing and they showed you the ropes, but it was, you never actually said, would you be my mentor? You know what I mean? Yeah. It just sort of like happened. And I think that, as you say, paying it forward, you know, I think that the best way we can honor those people is to be mentors to others in stealth mode. You know what I mean? Like, they don't really even know that they're being mentored.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's super, super. So, you know, with your, you know, decades of wisdom, you know, what do you see as some of the challenges when people are trying to improve their organizations, you know, the levels of complexity and what's a priority and, you know, how do we set a foundation, you know, things like that. What has your experience been?
Oh, that's a good question, Joseph. Yeah, I suppose for me, the one thing that I see time and time again when I visit organizations is they don't really have what I would call great teamworks in the organization. So, yeah, they've got teamwork. People are nice to each other. People say hello and goodbye at the end of the day. And people do help each other throughout the day. But you still see there's lots of silos in an organization. And the organization as a whole isn't pulling together in one direction to take the business forward.
Right.
And that's what I see is the biggest problem. And that's made even worse in many organizations by the fact that leadership really struggle to have effective communication with their people. And that in itself becomes a problem that affects the ability to get great teamwork.
You know, so, communication is a big issue, isn't it? Because you know, I do an exercise in some of my conferences and workshops where I have people, you know, cut up a piece of paper and draw some things on it. And the instructions are pretty simple, but when they're done, there's probably six different varieties of the outcomes.
Yeah. You know? I've seen those. Yeah.
And, you know, I think that we assume too much into our instructions. You know, when we're trying to communicate, you know, are we being clear and concise enough? You know what I mean? And it's really tough because sometimes if you get too clear and concise, people think that you're being abrupt. You know what I mean? It pulls out an emotion. But in reality, it really is that simple. And I think that sometimes we add clutter to our conversation that, in fact, diminishes the fidelity of what it is that you're trying to communicate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I completely agree with you. And what for me, what makes it worse is leaders don't really develop good rapport with their people in the first place. So, you know, in time, you've got to have great conversations, good conversations, and sometimes you need to have difficult conversations with your people.
Right.
And if you've got a good rapport with your people, they're so much easier to have those difficult conversations. You've got to build those levels of trust in the organization right. with the people. Right. And you certainly can't over-communicate. You can under-communicate quite easily. It's just being consistent and keep reminding people what the messages are and why the message is the message.
Yeah.
What's in it for them? What's in it for the business? And just keeping them on side, basically.
So what were some of the biggest lessons you learned, you know, most impactful lessons you learned while you were at Toyota?
Oh, Joseph. Oh.
You only had 30 years.
Yeah. I suppose the one that, it's really something that I'm very passionate about is, you know, everybody comes to work to do a great job. I believe that. I've seen that time and time again in Toyota. Nobody comes to work to make mistakes. Nobody comes to work to get it wrong. Nobody comes to work to make it difficult for everybody else. Everybody gives up their valuable time to come to work, to feel like they've contributed in a successful way and being recognized for that. And I think, you know, I've during my career, many, many times I've listened to people present back activities. And sometimes your immediate response is, well, this is not what we want. But actually, I've tried to develop the habit of I've got the monkey on one shoulder that tells me this isn't right. This is not good. And I've developed this other monkey on the other shoulder to keep him quiet.
Right.
Constantly just remind myself, everybody comes to work to do a great job. Work with that and believe that, and then try and understand why people didn't deliver what it was you were expecting. You find the problem isn't with the people. It's with the leadership.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most powerful thing that I've learned in 30 years. And I constantly, it's difficult. Don't get me wrong. You know, to constantly remind yourself that fact that everybody comes to work to do a great job when you've had a really bad situation is a very hard thing to do. And I've been practicing it for those 30 years. Well, probably not 30 years, but the bulk of those 30 years. And yeah, I'm still no expert.
I had a project in Florida last year, and it was a horrific organization. There wasn't anything that was running well in this organization.
Yeah.
But in particular, the owner of the company, we would walk the shop floor at night, and he'd point out things that were wrong, okay, all over the shop. I mean, he had a 250,000 square feet of shop. I mean, so it's a pretty big facility. And he would point out this and point out that. And I'd ask him, you know, why is it this way? And he would look at me and he'd say it this way, because they're dumb. I mean, he'd emphasize dumb. And I mean, what do you mean they're dumb? And he'd say, well, you know, they lack leadership. And, you know, I know that he was referring to the people that were supervisors on shop floor, but they were just reflective of him.
Absolutely. And
at the end of the day, you know, he was absolutely right.
Yeah.
They lacked leadership.
Yeah.
And they lacked it at the top.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the way he said it was just so, like, you know, condescending. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like he went out and purposefully hired people that were substandard, you know, and it just, there's so many conflicts in that conversation. I can't even tell you. I mean, it was completely, you know, the antithesis of respect for people.
Yes.
And what are you going to do? I mean, yeah. You know, the one thing is I've seen people leaving that organization. It was, you know, like 150 people in the shop. And one of their industrial engineers went to Tesla, and another one went to another marquee company. And, like, you know, I'm sure they will go forward knowing what not to look for in an employer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, having gone through that.
And I'm sure many more people will leave that organization unless his beliefs and his values and his habits change in that respect. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in reality, the organization might leave him one way or another, right? I mean, you know, you can only run a business into the ground like that so long before you can't do it anymore. So, you know, you being a Toyota guy, you know, I don't want to, you know, bang on this too much, but, you know, I get on LinkedIn, as you know, and I write a bunch of articles and share accordingly. And what I notice is that if I were to write an article that references Lean or Toyota, and I don't sing high praises and put them both on a pedestal or even an altar to worship, if I don't you know, position them in that that, you know, holy spot, I get flamed. You know what I mean? Like, they just, there was one gentleman I said, you know, asked a question once, what's the difference between Lean and Six Sigma? And I said, well, you know, Lean is about velocity and Six Sigma is about the quality of the process. And man, everybody jumped on me and said, what do you mean? Lean's not about quality. You know, Lean's not about quality. I said, I didn't say that. I said, you know, it's about velocity. It's about speed. It's about getting rid of the friction. You know what I mean? Getting rid of all the waste. I didn't say it wasn't about quality, you know, but I didn't say everything that it was either. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I didn't talk about it being a culture. I didn't talk about, you know, it being about the people. I just said, it's about velocity. And you know, just recently, there was another post where I said, you know, maybe, you know, Toyota, well, isn't the, you know, the shining North Star that everybody should aspire to. And, you know, some people would say, well, geez, you know, it's got the biggest market share, and it doesn't. or it's got the most profitable automobile maker, and it's not, or that it's makes the most dependable vehicles, and it doesn't. And I just wonder how many people don't question it. You know what I mean? And now, mind you, if somebody came out and said to me, Toyota is a great company that tries to drive value to its customers and is always looking to improve itself. You know what? That's a statement I can get behind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it is a great company. Okay. Yeah. It does care about its customers and it's always trying to improve itself. But to put it on a pedestal unreservedly or without challenge just seems to be, wrong thinking. Are you one of those people or
the big question?
Yeah.
I suppose I was originally. I've got to be honest, JP. When I was inside the Toyota family and very ensuring that, just working within the business, it was all about what we did in Toyota, deploying the tools of TPS and the Toyota way culture and living that life within a family of like-minded people. And then, as you remember, I established Toyota Lean Management Center and set that up, basically trying to take what Toyota knows and as an educational opportunity into the outside world. And the first thing that I said to myself was, how do I sell this to the people outside the business? And the big question is, we called it the Toyota Lean Management Center. And we debated for days about should we have lean in the title, because we didn't recognize lean internally. We never referred to what we did as lean. It was just the way we did our business. But finally, we did adopt lean, and we adopted it because the outside world associate with lean. So it was more of a ploy in that sense than what we were about. But very quickly, we realized that the tools of the Toyota production system are great. And yes, I can take one or two of those tools into any organization that needs that tool and make a bit of a difference. But that's not operational excellence. That's just making a bit of a difference on one thing. It's the cultural side of Toyota that's the important side of things. The way the leaders lead, the way the leaders behave, and the habits that the leaders develop to generate great teamwork in the organization. And then it's that teamwork that drives the business forward. And the TPS tools are the toolkit that's at their disposal. And they can innovate, they can find new tools, that's fine. And any organization can do that. So, no, I don't bang the drum for Toyota. When I go into any organization, the first thing that I'm mindful of doing is understanding who they are, where they've come from, where they're trying to get to, and how can I help them. And the last thing they want to hear is me just going on about Toyota does this, Toyota does that, Toyota does the other. They don't want to know that.
Right, right.
And the beauty is, from my experience doing it externally and doing it internally, I've got a way now of explaining things and adapting things. So it's not about Toyota's brilliant, great, or any indifferentness. It's about what does this organization need and why.
Right, right. I like the way you said it, trying to figure out where they want to be, where they are, how they're going to get there, what is their context?
I
think it was Drucker or Deming. I think I get them confused sometimes, but I think it was Deming that said that, strategy, culture eats strategy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yes, I did hear that. I don't know if that's the right author, but yeah, I've heard that phrase before.
Yeah, it's one of those two. I forget to get them confused.
I think it's respectful, though, Joe. This is a tough world that we're in today. Business is hard. It's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it successfully.
Yeah.
But it's hard. There's internal pressures, there's external pressures, there's different stakeholder interests to manage, both externally and internally. And so for any business that's still surviving today, give them some respect. They're doing a great job. Yeah.
My father was a lead engineer at IBM. And I was young, in my high school days. And he came home particularly frustrated one day. And I asked him, I said, what's the problem? He says, work is just was tough the last couple of days. You know, I'm trying to get everybody to, get on board, and I'm having difficulty. And I said, but Pop, you're a manager at IBM. You should just be able to get them on board. And he says, listen, management would be great if it wasn't for the people problems.
Yeah. I can understand where he's coming from.
Yeah,
but then we've got to flip that and say, but most of those people problems stem from leadership issues.
Full
circle.
It's funny because even if you have a great team and you have exquisite communication, sometimes you just falter. Sometimes you just, you miss a step, you get out of sync. So even that, you think about any football team, whether it's a European football or American football, you can have a great team doing great things, and just one game, they just screw up. You know what I mean? They're just not in the groove with one another, not like they were the previous day, and not like they will be in the next game. So, sometimes, and we just, as leaders, we just have to try to figure out, first off, we have to try to figure out the telltale signs, because usually there's an indicator that something's going awry before it actually goes awry.
Yeah.
And then once it goes awry, you have to be able to recognize it and get it back on track.
Yeah.
But that's just the lot of a leader, right?
Well, there's an interesting point there, isn't there? So just at first level, the point I would raise there is, they didn't want to screw up, but they did. So as long as there's some reflection of what happened, what could have we done better, how will we do it different next time, then that's a great place to be.
Yeah.
And as a leader, people learn so much from those situations. You learn more when it goes wrong than when it goes right. So as a leader, one of the difficulties I always had over the years was deciding when to let my teams fail. And that's a technique. It's a Toyota technique that says, if you can afford for the team to fail, let them fail and let them learn. If you can't afford for them to fail, then you need to give them some help, some encouragement, some direction, some support. So as a leader, you need to know what's happening.
Yeah.
But
one of the exercises, there's two exercises I do on any endeavor, whether it's a project or what we're going to do for a day or whatever it might be. There's red teaming, which I do before an action. And red teaming exercise is basically somebody's presenting a plan, and the people in the audience are supposed to challenge the plan, not the person presenting. This is very key.
Yeah.
You don't attack the person presenting.
Yeah.
You attack the plan. And the person presenting will defend the plan, or if there is a gap that's been illuminated by the challenges, then there's a discussion.
Yeah.
As to, why do you think that's a concern? What we should do about it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
After the action, we have a debrief. And that's what you were just referring to. It's like, what worked, what didn't work, what could each of us individually have done better, what could we collectively have done better. If we had a do-over, what would it be and why? What are the lessons learned?
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Carrying it forward.
Yeah.
Super. So now that you're on the outside, what are some of the fun types of projects that you get involved in? The ones that really get your blood and your emotion going?
Well, fortunately enough, over the pandemic, I had one client who I've been supporting virtually.
Mm-hmm.
I was in two doubts about that, to be honest, when we started, whether it would be successful or not, because I'm used to being able to go to the shop floor, go and see with my own eyes and talk to people and feel it and being around it. So being many, many miles away, sat at the other end of a computer, talking to people and explaining to people was a novelty. But we came up with solutions. Taking cameras on shop floor tours and things like that. Mm-hmm. But for me, the big point is when having discussed and debated and talked around things for many, many times, finally somebody gets it.
Right.
Yeah, and you can physically see their light bulb moment. And you know, that's not to say that I tell them what the answer is. Clearly, that's not the right approach. Sometimes that might be the approach.
Right.
But it's coming up with the right questions and the right challenges that get them to go away and realize for themselves that there's another solution or there's a different way.
Right.
Coming back with that way. Mm-hmm. So that was one project I've been involved in. And then I've been involved with one quite local to me, which has been an on-site activity supporting a transformation for an organization who right at the start said, we don't want a big Toyota. Don't be bringing that here. And I said, whoa, guys, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. That's not my place to determine that for you. But then to see the shift from where they were at the start 9-10 months ago to where they are today is absolutely phenomenal. See how their management team are working together as a team is just, you know, it's like music to my ears.
And good stuff. Yeah. Now you are involved in rally cars. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's one of my little hobbies. Not only do I enjoy building rally cars, and I don't build world-class rally cars. I'm talking local club level competition cars.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask a question. Are they Toyotas? Are they based on Toyotas? Yeah,
well, funnily enough, no. Although I have been in a Toyota a couple of times on events. I'm a petrol head from the sort of 70s and 80s. Uh-huh. So the vehicles that I choose to modify are either late 70s, early 80s classics. So Opel Mantas, Ford Escort Mark IIs, that sort of thing.
Very cool. Very cool.
So I strip and build them, and then I compete. So I have driven, but I suppose my strongest seat is the co-driver's seat, and I'm not probably the best at that either.
The navigator?
The navigator.
Yeah, super. Yeah. That's really cool. And how long have you been doing that?
Oh, 2006, really, when I really started.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
I've always been a fan of motorsport, and I've always been a petrolhead, but getting more involved in it came sort of late in life for me at 2006.
A buddy of mine in South Africa, he was in Rhodesia at one time before it was Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And he is a big rally car driver. And I got to tell you, getting in the car with him scares the shit out of me. Okay. Because, you know, we'll go out into the bush and he's driving like he's a rally car driver. Okay. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? You know, there's no roll cage, you know, there's a case of beer in the back and a seatbelt, and that's, you know, my only salvation. But he just tears around the highways, and I'm just saying, oh, Lord Jesus, let me get there.
Yeah. I'm a bit more refined now in my older years. I tend to try and stick to the legal limits of the road.
Good, good. Well, in South Africa, I don't know if there are any legal limits.
No, I would think not. So, I'd probably resort to mode in South Africa, but there you go.
Well, listen, Kevin, I want to thank you very much for taking the time today and sharing your experience and wisdom and the stories. It was good stuff, really good stuff. And I hope that we get to see each other out in the field sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I hope so, JP. It'd be good to catch up and share some stories over a drink, maybe.
Absolutely. Nice. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, Kevin.
Listen, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you well.
Thank you very much,
Kevin. Take care of yourself.
Yep.
Thank you.
Cheers now. Yep.
Cheers now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to State of Readiness. You can discover more episodes and learn about the book written by Joseph Paris of the same title at www.state-of-readiness.com. You can learn more about Joseph Paris at www.josephparis.me/card.